is August 20th, 2015. You are looking live at Athens, Georgia. This is episode 522 of the Will Leach Experience podcast on Sports on Earth. I am the aforementioned Will Leach, and I thank you for spending part of your day with me. As you know, we are on two podcasts a week schedule going into the busiest part of the sports year. We had Allison Fedoroz on Monday. We'll be back again with her next week. I will be in Arizona for my yearly trip with Brian Leach, the poor soul who fathered me, to watch a team that he cares about. Me being an impartial journalist, I have no real care one way or the other, but he is into the St. Louis Cardinals, so I'm doing him a favor and going with him for a yearly baseball trip he likes. I don't really care. I just sit and analyze it and have no cheering interest whatsoever. But I will be there at him at Chase Field on Monday. We'll still be broadcasting from there. Allison won't be there, but I will be. So, but I am long overdue to have today's guest on. He graciously had me on to ruin his much better podcast. For those of you that are regular listeners to Mike Petrillo's podcast, Batcast podcast, you will know that the one that you skipped that got the fewest downloads. Like I'm the guy. I now have my own podcast too, and that's what I'm having now with Mike Petrillo. He is here to talk all stuff Statcast and his own podcast, and probably some Dodgers. So, Mike, hey, how's it going?
You know, I'm very good, Will. I think, as I remember, you are the only guest I've had where you've been the only guest. Usually, we do 2 a week, and that was all Will each all the time, which is not a bad thing.
I think it was because you passed out.
Modest as always.
Oh my God, this guy brings up Rick Ankiel one more time. Will, we did not have Statcast when Ankiel was in center field. Stop asking. Anyway, Mike, thank you for coming on. I have a ton of questions for you, but what I'm most curious about, and this kind of is probably launches into a lot of conversation. You know, we forget sometimes because you know we're into this, we pay really close attention to this stuff. We forget sometimes that. You know, like just the other day, I'm assuming you're on Twitter. You saw the Bernie Lincecum column.
Oh, God, yes, I did. I went back to 1994 and I saw that column, yes.
Right, exactly. Except the thing is while you and I, we think of it as like 1994, at best, frankly, 1994. But I have to say, you know, as the average person, I think people are getting better about it and people are understanding. And no longer is my dad confused what the OPS thing when they showed up the scoreboard at Busch Stadium. I think people have made certainly made strides in this stuff. But still, you know, over a certain age, that's shocking to us now because we're also tapped into it. But I think there's still more people that feel that way. Acronym. But they certainly a lot more people think of it that way than the people would recognize. So I'm curious for you, you've been working with this thing, which is even, I think it's simpler than most people think or are willing to understand, and you certainly know that it is, but it's still new. And anytime something is new, even if it's a very base thing, it's got to be kind of frustrating sometimes to have to explain to people, okay, this is not that hard, it's just new.
It's as complicated as you want to make it, right? Like, if you just think about the technology, yeah, these are military-grade radars in ballparks, and that's terrifying to think about. And these are numbers you're not familiar with and numbers you've never thought of, and, you know, change is scary to a lot of people. So I totally get that. But I think if you think about it in the sense of this isn't necessarily trying to reinvent what baseball is, it's just explaining things you've always seen, right? You've always thought this catcher had a better throwing arm than that catcher. Well, now we could put a number to that, right? You've always thought this left fielder took a better route to balls than that one. We can put numbers to that. It's almost entirely explaining things that you've already seen, and that shouldn't be as scary. And I think the people who find it scary are the same people who are still complaining about wins and RBIs and just are never even going to get on board that train, much less this one.
Yeah, it's hard in a lot of ways to really, like, you have to be predisposed. Like, you have to be predisposed against it. And it's funny because, you know, I wrote a column about this, and I was a little gentler on Bob Costas than I might have wanted to be. But, you know, even that first game, I like Bob Costas, you know. He's obviously Bob Costas. He's a broadcaster. But, like, you can tell, like, there was a skepticism in his voice even when he started talking about this. I didn't feel like it was in John Smoltz, for example. Like, Smoltz seemed to have really steeped himself in the idea. But I knew we were in trouble when there was the, seriously, what good would this have for Willie Mays? Did he even need a computer? And it's like, actually, that would be awesome to find out what Willie Mays would be able to do in this. And it is funny to think that, like, I'm wondering, is it just an age thing? Have you seen, like, anyone that's invested in this, it feels like it wouldn't be hard to convince them. It feels like it's just a regular, almost a generational thing.
Well, first, I just have to answer a question you didn't actually ask me. And you brought up John Smoltz, and you said that he was really thoughtful about it. And I have to back that up 100%. I was on MLB Network with him like 2 months ago. And off camera, he just asked me the most intelligent and well-thought-out questions.
Oh, yeah.
And I can't say enough about him. So you're absolutely...
He is awesome. He is, like, it's funny. I'm generally scared of former athletes, and he is terrific. And he's like genuinely curious. And really, and you get, and it, I think it comes across in the broadcast.
Yeah, well, he, you know, he's famous for having that look. You know, he's bearing down in the ninth inning, and that's what it looks like when you're just talking to him in the hallway. It's absolutely terrifying. But he's friendly and gracious and really intelligent. As to your actual question, I think that's probably true. I mean, you've got people they've had these stats for 60 years, 70 years, however old they are, and it's served them fine, right? They can probably still go just to home runs and RBIs and say, well, they say Willie Mays is great. What else do I need to know to say Willie Mays is great? And if that's, you know, the level you want to go into it, that's fine. And I can't even judge that because that's me in other sports, right? Like, I'm sort of I used to be a really big football fan, and I'm a casual New York Giants fan. And when they cut the guy who made some great catch like 5 years ago, I get upset about it, even though analytically I'm certain that's the right call. You know, I mean, there are different ways to consume it based on what sort of level you want to get into.
So, okay, going over, so when you kind of got started with this, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, you've worked for Lester Sports Earth, you know, you've done a lot of writing, you've been around Fangraphs for years and years, but like, you know, StatCast still, I mean, it's new to everybody in a lot of ways. Did you get like a crash course? Did they take you into a secret room at Chelsea Market and explain how all the sausage was made, or what was your initial indoctrination?
Well, yeah, if by secret room you mean the cubicle of one of the developers downstairs,
yeah,
then yes, that's absolutely what happened. And I can tell you that was, well, I don't know, 5 or so months ago. And even just since then, we've come like light years beyond what we were able to do then, because, you know, it's new to everybody. And we're sort of learning what tools we need to make to consume this data and to sort this data. And just like the things I can do now would have been much more difficult a couple months ago. And the things I'm doing now, like Mike, a year from now, will probably look back and laugh like, oh, really? That's the only place you guys are at? Because there's just so much data coming in that it's almost, I don't want to say overwhelming, but it's trying to figure out what's the best way to cut this up. Like, how can we be the most useful with this data that we've never had before? You know, does this matter? Is 2 weeks of spin data relevant, or does it take 2 months or 2 years? That's the kind of stuff we don't know yet. So while we're getting answers from all this, we're actually getting a lot of questions too, which is fascinating.
It almost feels like a lot of the early, like the first month, it feels legit, almost be all maintenance anyway. Like, I remember Ben Lindbergh and Sam Miller were talking on the Baseball Perspectives podcast about how when they originally looked into some numbers, and it was like, that guy threw that pitch 38 miles an hour in between 298 mile an hour. Like, okay, they have a few things to fix. So it feels like the first thing is just maintenance and figure out, like, the glitches in the system. But now, you're right, it does feel that as we've gone into the season and gone farther along, it feels... You know, it's still early. Everything is small sample size. The lifetime of the universe is really, in a way, small sample size. But certainly, as everything grows, it feels like we're getting a better understanding. And I'm curious, as a fan and as someone that has followed this stuff and has been analytical about it, but still has access to information that you didn't have before, what's something that you learned about maybe a specific player, that really surprised you to be like, wow, I wouldn't have actually thought that guy had that much spin or maybe had that much deception?
I think, you know, overall, probably looking at hitter health, right? So if you think about pitchers and, you know, for years and years, oh, he's down 5 miles an hour, he's probably hurt, right? And we've never really been able to do that for hitters. And I think that's something we've done a couple times this year. Early in the year, Hanley Ramirez, after he put his shoulder into the wall, McCutcheon's knee, just last week, actually, Chase Utley coming back off of the ankle. And you look at exit velocity, it's just very similar as throwing velocity. Guys aren't hitting the ball as hard when they're hurt. And you might not be able to see that with the naked eye, that he's hitting it at 85 miles an hour as opposed to 95 miles an hour. But this is stuff that's really coming through in the data. And it's kind of exciting because you can judge, well, this guy might be hurt, and trying to play through it for hitters in a way you've never been able to do before. And, you know, there's a lot of different things that have come out of StatCast, but I think that for me is the most exciting one.
To me, there are certain things that are so obvious that when you look at this, like perceived velocity for me, it's like, who cares what the average velocity is?
Yeah.
Like, now that we can actually see what perceived velocity is, why would I care how fast it's actually going?
Well, I'm leading a charge to try to rename perceived velocity the Carter Capps Memorial Perceived Velocity Stat. Because you asked for like a breakout star. Carter Capps. Like, that's your man. You know, he's obviously, he throws hard. He throws 97, 98, whatever, and he's got that weird-looking hop. But now that you see he's actually throwing it from not 60 foot 6 inches, it's like 51 feet, and it looks like it's 101 miles an hour, and he's the only guy who looks like he's throwing harder than Aroldis Chapman. That's exciting, because that is a guy who stands out that you wouldn't really have noticed before.
Yeah, this is what, another reason I've been sad that Jordan Walton has been hurt most of the year. But he's another guy that, like, has that little step and just changes it in a lot of ways. You've worked mostly with what – I'm curious, have you worked with – are you been mostly working with media on this stuff and kind of, like, doing outreach and research? Or like, how much are the teams involved in this stuff? Maybe even not just with your aspect of it, but everybody.
Well, I mean, I know the teams have access to it, and they've had access to variations of it for years. I don't work directly with them. It's basically, you know, in a similar way where I would at Fangraphs, I come up with some ideas. At least here, I actually have to run them by editors and make sure that I'm not crazy or writing something that no one would actually want to read. But yeah, I mean, it's fascinating to try to come up with that fine line between this is really interesting, but it's still relevant, hopefully, fingers crossed, to, you know, the general audience.
Is there, you and I talked in the last podcast, I've seen you put a couple tweets about this, the idea of StatCast breakout stars. And we, one guy we've talked about is Randall Grichuk, and he's now hurt. But, you know, it was clear even when he was hitting like 240 and had like three homers, the ball was leaping off his bat in a way that I have to say, you know, you always hear people talk about. The fun part for me about StatCast is the idea, like, now you're quantifying, oh, man, the ball just jumps off his bat. Well, now we can actually quantify that, and it feels like Grichuk was a guy you could see maybe before anybody else did. Is that true? And if so, maybe who were some other people that were maybe that way?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think some of the pushback, I mean, people are like, oh, yeah, Giancarlo Stanton hits the ball really hard. You know, that's great. We knew that already. But now you can quantify it, and there's value in that. I think you're right about Grichuk, because he's a guy who didn't really get much national play before the season. Then all of a sudden he comes up, and he starts pounding the ball. And anybody can do that for a week, but he kept pounding the ball. He kept being at the top of the leaderboards, and he kept being at the top of the leaderboards. And before he got hurt, he wasn't just hitting the ball hard. If you look at his numbers, he was producing. I mean, he was a valuable player for that St. Louis team, and his loss is really going to hurt them. And he's a guy that you probably noticed maybe weeks or even months earlier just because of this data. You know, and I think that's an exciting idea that there is a new way to get to guys that are interesting maybe sooner than you would have before.
Is there a sense, you know, I play around with the StatCast leaderboard, and I'll get into Chapman in a moment, but we play around with the StatCast leaderboard, and, you know, there's the events of the number of actual hits and, you know, to increase the size. Is there a number that you feel most comfortable? Like, right now, the second highest average launch speed in baseball is Tommy Pham. and I've watched Tommy Pham, and he actually does. He does hit the ball hard, but you're talking 25 events here. The average height is 26 feet. Like, you know, this is not – this guy just hit a few line drives here or there. Have you been able to – do you have a this guy qualifies on our board – notion where you've seen a number where the numbers where everything starts to kind of stabilize and become consistent?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. And obviously the number is very different based on what metric we're talking about. For Tommy Pham, I knew you were going to ask about him, so I actually went and looked it up. I wanted to make sure he didn't have one, you know, outlier 800 mile an hour line drive, because right. he's hitting a buck 60. Like, he's not been very productive this year. But, you know, you're absolutely right. He is number two. He's 97 miles an hour or something like that. And that's legitimate. He is actually hitting the ball that hard. And you're right that his sample of 25 or whatever it is, balls in play, is not nearly enough. For that, it's probably about a month or so of regular play. So maybe, you know, 80 to 100-ish, let's say 100 balls in play is probably a decent enough stabilization rate. If you get there, it's not by accident. And I think that's kind of something we need to test as time goes on. Like, you know, is a full season enough for some of these numbers? Is it not enough? Is a month enough? We don't know the answers to all those things yet, but those, I think, are definitely things that we're going to try to figure out.
I'm curious about that when it comes to, is there, what's the average league-wide launch speed?
Well, you're putting me on the spot because I don't know off the top of my head. I believe I want to say 88, 90, something like that.
What's it sound like? Give me a rough, yeah.
Yeah, like 88 or 90, I think, is probably about right.
Okay. So, because I'm curious, too, that, like, you know, you look at exit velocity, and you see the highest ones of the year. It's not like, you know, is there a number? It seems like, let's see Tommy Pham as an example. He's had 25 events. Let's say he has one where he's got 119. Like, does it tell you something about someone, regardless of what their average velocity is, if they have one hit that is 117 launch speed?
I would say probably not, because it could tell you that he's got the capability of doing it, but you feel like anybody who's not a D. Gordon or a Billy Hamilton, anybody who's not that, if they get that right pitch and they square it up perfectly, maybe they're not going to get 120 like Stanton did, but just about anybody, even pitchers, we have pitchers who've hit 110 mile an hour balls. The skill isn't so much being able to do it once, it's being able to do it repeatedly.
Which is different than the average pitch velocity, which is the idea of you guys have the chat, the fastest pitches. Like, it's different than that. And the idea, if you're throwing 103 miles an hour, odds are you will be able to do that again.
Do you love the fact that the Aroldis Chapman filter now exists on the MLB.com?
You had to, otherwise you'd
It's actually, I can tell you this, it's more than you think it is, because those leaderboards go to 50, right? And so he filled up the top 50, but it doesn't end there. Like, we didn't show it all. He actually has something like the top 240 pitches of the year. Like, that's how far it would have had to go. So that's why the filter exists.
Really, the top 240.
It's something like that. But yeah, he is unbelievable what he's done.
So, and I'm curious too, because also when you look at the perceived speed of that, I think his highest perceived speed is 105 in a lot of ways. Like, that feels to me what's really exciting. And even if you are one of those people that's inherently skeptical of StatCast, for me, the idea, even if you're just a base, I don't care for the stuff, what is with this math, everybody can appreciate, he throws so freaking hard. Like, everyone can appreciate that. For me, if there's anything that's going to, even the most casual fan in the world, is going to love the fact that, people have been debating for years, who threw harder, Randy Johnson or Bob Feller or Roger Clemens? The idea you're actually going to be able to have this. Aroldis Chapman is he's almost the root of StatCast. In a lot of ways.
Yeah, and I could never say this with certainty that Aroldis Chapman is the hardest throwing pitcher of all time, but I think I have a pretty good idea that he is, just because as a whole, pitchers throw harder a little bit each and every year. I don't think that there's anyone who has been able to sustain it like he has. We'll never be able to know, but if you think about it from this point forward, maybe 10 years, 20 years from now, he might still be at the top of that list.
Yeah, I wonder about that. He's like Kobayashi. in the top dog eating
contest. Yeah, he'll never be topped. And honestly, I don't know that I'd want to see a pitcher who could top that. Because what happens if you get a guy who's throwing 108? Does his arm just fly off into the stands at some point? I mean, there is a limit to what humans can achieve, and I feel like he's got to be close to that.
Yeah, and as well, because I guess the second average, the second highest is Nathan Eovaldi. He seems to be the one. When you take off the filter, he has the top three.
Yeah, and he threw. They pitched this. He pitched this afternoon, and he threw something 20 something balls over 100 miles an hour for a starting pitcher, which is incredible.
Yeah, that is incredible, actually. But now I'm curious. I wonder if it loses something, though, because I'm playing around with StatCast now. He's throwing the three fastest pitches, but if you look at the average pitch velocity, for example, is there a guy that mixes it up more? How do you calculate the average pitch velocity? Is it just the four seamers? Is it a specific pitch, or you mark? Okay, if Chapman's throwing 100. Miles an hour, that's just on the four seamers, right?
I think that's true on the public leaderboards, because the private dashboard we work with, you can actually sort by pitch. So I can say just on the curveball, just on the four seamer. I'm not 100% sure what the public board is, but I think that's right.
Okay, we groundlings and minions out here only
yes.
have access to the public board.
We are in this Ivy Tower looking down upon you, if that's what you're looking for, yes.
I've got a desk there too, man. I'm not there very often. I know how it is there.
Baby steps. I'm certain that more of that's going to be public over time.
But it's fun for me too to see how StatCast has been integrated not only into MLB Network broadcast, but even across the board to see. I watch Quick Pitch every morning, and there is a segment sponsored by Amazon. And our Amazon services or whatever poor people Amazon is working to promote their product. When it's exciting for me, that is that makes it feel less strange. Is the more and more you see in that. And I wonder, it's the same thing that people say about OPS and ERA plus everything else on regular broadcast. The more people see it, I think it speaks well to how integrated it's been in MLB stuff. And Is that something that he told you when you kind of first started? This is something when you're on it. I've seen you on MLB Network. This is something. This is something that you that they're clearly committing to in a lot of ways. And I think not just because it's an in-house product.
I think that's absolutely true. I mean, and I think you see it in the fact that it's not just on MLB Network, right? I mean, you've seen it on some Fox broadcasts and I think ESPN some broadcasts. And you're right that the more you can integrate it, the more it's going to be accepted, even if it's not branded with a big flashing StatCast logo, right? I mean, if you saw a home run right now and you weren't immediately told how long that home run was estimated to be, you'd think, well, what's wrong, right? And then you don't have to know that StatCast, but it is StatCast, right? And I think that's the same way with maybe we're not quite there with exit velocity, like the ball off the bat, but I think we're getting close. People are starting to understand that, you know, and I think it also helps that, like, 100 miles an hour is really the delineator between, like, pretty good and really good, and that's dumb luck, right? I mean, that's just a round number people are used to. It could be 62 miles an hour, and maybe it wouldn't be as effective. It happens to be 100 or close to it. That works in everybody's favor. But you're right. The more people see it, no matter what it's called, the more they're going to get used to it, and I think that's what's going to help, you know, push us forward.
Yeah, it's like that old idea of what temperature scales you use. Like, say what you want for Celsius and Kelvin, but, like, Fahrenheit, 0 is really cold, but you're not dying. 100 is really hot, but you're not dying.
Right.
It's very easy to go. Whereas 100 in Kelvin, you're dead, and 0 and so on.
Well,
so,
I'm going to start measuring line drives in Kelvin and see what happens.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to enjoy that. I'm curious, when you look at other – now that we have this, I'll confess I sometimes find myself skeptical of other things, of maybe people that don't have access to this kind of technology. I'm curious, you know, I know these things aren't entirely unconnected, but, you know, I've been on a little bit of a rant a while back about the K-zone, because to me the K-zone feels like maybe it's right and maybe it's not. It seems to be more likely, right? But as a viewer, I find it distracting because I feel like it doesn't actually tell me anything about, like, now I can look at MLB, I can look at at-bat, and I can see the spin of the, I can look at StatCast and look at the spin of the pitch and the perceived velocity and actually see where it was and what kind of pitch it was. But really, all that box does is just tell me whether I'm supposed to be angry or not.
Well, I think that's true, and it's a useful tool, but I think people take it almost too literally. Like, that is, to the millimeter, without any question, the strike zone. And if that little red dot or green dot is just the slightest pixel out of it, then the umpire screwed up. And that's not always the case. So sometimes I worry that it's creating a little bit of a misperception there.
Yeah, it does. It's like a pellet of anger. Like, it just shoots it to you. It's like, you want to, like, just watch a game and, like, oh, that's a tough pitch, just missed that call. But instead, because you see it, it releases this level of anger and so on. Do you think, like, I'm curious, now that you see stuff like this and you see how precise this how precise this stuff can go, more than anyone, do you find yourself having stronger or lesser opinions on the decisions that maybe the ability of the human eye, as great as the human eye the umpires have, the ability of the human eye even to detect some of this stuff?
Well, some of it we could never expect the human eye to detect, right? Like spin rate, you know. If you think about it, it's like 2,200 RPMs, that's, you know, revolutions per minute. But the ball's not in the air per minute. It's in the air for like a second. So obviously, like, there's no way anybody could know that. This is things that would never have existed without these radars. So I think that kind of stuff, it's absolutely necessary for. Even the other stuff, you can kind of have an eye test about who's the fastest, who throws the hardest. And maybe you're right and maybe you're not, but the best, that's, we don't have to guess anymore. You know, we don't have to rely on what other people think or guess or hope. And we have real hard metrics. And that's really all it is just putting data. I'd take the guesswork out of it. Now we can say, no, this is actually for certain. This is what we know.
I'm not sure a lot of the stuff that we get from StatCast we would have even considered, we would have even thought of asking for 10 years ago. You know, and I'm so glad we have the information, but like I think it went beyond our imagination to even think of, you know, to figure out a route angle or so on, yeah, that we'd be able to do that. So I'm curious, now that this door, we kind of opened the box a little bit, we've cracked the door, if you want to play futurist with me for a moment, are there things that you watch a game now and wonder, man, it'd be nice to be able to figure out exactly what that is or exactly what that is, that maybe we cracked the door open a little bit or you can see us maybe understanding a little better down the line?
Yeah, there is actually. So I think one of the coolest things that we've done this year is look at stolen bases. And I wrote a thing about how you catch Billy Hamilton stealing. And we used an example from a Tigers game. Alex Wilson was pitching and James McCann was catching. And Hamilton didn't get a great jump, but he still only barely got caught because he's that fast. And so we were able to measure his jump and we were able to measure how quickly the pitcher threw the ball. and how quickly the catcher threw the ball and all that, and that's great. But the one thing that was not measured that I think we're going to be able to measure soon is the, let's say, angle of the throw, right? Because you can do everything perfectly fast, but if the ball is maybe 2 feet off the bag as opposed to right on the bag, that might be the difference between safe and out. And I think that's a really important part that we don't have yet, but I think is possibly possible in the future, and that's something, like you said, we couldn't even have conceived of even a couple years ago.
Yeah, see, that's exciting. And, like, to me, the thing I love about this, and you go back to our earlier notion of how this connects to people that were maybe suspicious of, you know, of stats in the past. To me, the thing that I find irresistible about this as opposed to, you know, I can understand someone who wants to believe that it's all about talent and grit and heart and so on, not being able to demonize stuff as that's all just stats and computers and so on. But this tells you how fast people are and how hard they throw and what physical things they're able to do. To me, one of the most exciting things from this has been to realize just, you know, these guys are incredible athletes, but it really quantifies it in a way that I think tells us a little something ineffable more about the game than we could have understood before.
I think you're right, and I think you're right because it's real, right? Like, if you don't like wins above replacement or weighted runs created, like, that's fine, and you can argue because they're made up, they're invented. I can't see a weighted run created, right, when I go to the ball game. I can't see a win above replacement. But I can see, you know, Mike Trout running 50 feet across the field to make a great catch, you know, or I can see Chapman throwing the ball out of his mind. Those are real things that you can see, and that's just putting numbers to something you see, and I'm hoping that that's going to make it a little easier for people to pick up on.
I'm excited about the idea. The more and more I think about this, I love the idea of Chapman being, like, I wonder if in 10 years we're going to look, or in 15, 20 years, we'll look at Chapman as, like, having this unbreakable record. Like, it'll be like, he's Cy Young. Like, you know, we start looking at this for as years go along. Because to me, it reminds me a little bit of the way we do postseason stats now. Like, it makes me wish that I could compare the postseason stats cumulative of people in the past when they had more rounds to now. Like, to me, I'm going to wish in 20 years as more and more data comes in and we're able to have the leaderboard and the public leaderboard, not just a fancy private leaderboard that you guys have. But once we're all able to have the leaderboard, to be able to judge these guys over generations and to be able – because, you know, this is the ultimate debate that everybody always has. And I always want to say – we have people like, oh, these players today, they don't stand a candle to Mantle or Ruth or so on. I'm like, yeah, I know. They would destroy them because – they're so much faster, and they train year round, and they're able to do this. This is a way that we're actually going to be able to quantify this of what physically these players are like for years forward in a way that I wish we could have had for decades before now.
Well, you joke that we can't measure hard or grit, but the technology is really incredible, and I think we're going to crack that soon.
Well, somebody tell Hawk Harrelson. Make sure Hawk Harrelson.
Yeah, we can measure the will to win, no doubt.
I'm curious, this is my last question for you. As someone like this, you've written about the Dodgers a lot, you have a connection. You know, are you a Dodgers fan? I just got to call you a Dodgers fan, yes?
Yeah, in the same way you're a Cardinals fan, but like a national writer, I like to think that's the same way.
Okay, good. Just making sure that's okay. It's okay. Because I'm unabashedly that, and usually it just, all it does is get me yelled at. So I don't want to make sure I'm not putting you in a box. But I'm curious, as someone... are there times, like, when you go to a game, like, you know, are there is it hard to get out of your head sometimes? Is it hard to get out of, what an angle from Puig there, or, wow, imagine the spin that Kershaw had, or do you like that? Does it help in just, like, the casual viewing of a game with a beer in the stand?
Well, absolutely. I like, you know, no matter what team I'm watching, right, I like to get as much information as I can get, you know, and in years past it was on base percentage and then weighted runs created, and now it's exit velocity or spin rate. I think, you know, the right data can make watching the game more enjoyable. You know, as far as has it changed the way I watch the Dodgers, I think just in the sense that I've gotten a little less emotional and a little more analytic about it. I don't live and die with every win or loss, certainly, which is great because they've been doing a lot of losing lately, and it's a little bit frustrating. And I worry that in October, they're going to face the Cardinals for the third year in a row, and it's just not going to go well, and then I probably won't want to talk to you for a while.
That's right. No one ever wants to talk to you in October. I actually delete Twitter from my phone.
That's probably smart, yeah.
It probably seems like a smart play. Yeah, it's funny, though. I always think about the idea of knowing more information, sometimes not It's never better, I think, to have less information. But, like, for example, my favorite player growing up was Willie McGee. Like, I loved Willie McGee, and he hit 350, and he stole 60 bases. He held the seat. But, you know, I look at his stats now. He never walked. He struck out all the time. It was a fairly empty 350, and he was actually a worse base runner than I thought he was. And all this stuff that if I were watching him now, I'd look at, like, John Jay. John Jay would be a guy I would love on the Cardinals if I didn't know all the analytical stuff that my eyes, you know, that your eyes betray you about. So, you know, sometimes I wonder how much it helps me in that regard, but also it helps in that, like, now I root for players who actually make my team better.
Right, you know, and it works both ways. You might not have liked Willie McGee as much, but you sure, you know, I don't have a name in mind, but I'm sure there was somebody who didn't have a good batting average, didn't maybe get a lot of RBIs, but got on base all the time and played good defense. It was maybe more valuable than Willie McGee, and you would have loved that guy.
I would have appreciated Ray Lankford. So much.
There you go. Perfect.
That's a good example. I would appreciate it so much more. But Mike, this is I love what you're doing. I'm excited to see you killing it on this. And I for what it's worth, if the Cardinals and Dodgers do play each other in the World Series, I'm going to say goodbye to both you and Molly Knight before the series. I'll wave goodbye. I'll miss you. And then we'll all come together and talk about how warm of experience that was now that it's over.
Yeah, you know, as long as we talk before the series and not after, I think that'll be fun.
Exactly. You know, before and then maybe a couple weeks after.
In retrospect, sure. Well, depending on how it goes.
Exactly. Well, thanks, man. And I usually say this, but I'll let you to hear yourself. Where's the best place that we can find your stuff?
Mike_Petriello, Petriello on Twitter. And very soon there will be a MLB.com page with all of my archived writings. So check me out there.
Awesome. I was actually looking for that exact page.
Yeah, doesn't exist yet, but very soon.
That's very exciting. Well, thank you very much. So hang on, we're gonna take a little break. We'll pause and we'll do some trivia. It'll run tomorrow because it's all this illusion that we have in the podcast. That we'll call you back tomorrow and we'll do trivia.
Sounds perfect. Thanks, Will.
But all right, thank you. So this is the Most Experience Podcast. Thanks to Mike again. Follow him on Twitter at @MIKE_PETRIELLO and see him on MLB.com everywhere. He's great. This is the World Experience Podcast. The music is by the Sundogs. Please rate and review us on iTunes. We'll be back tomorrow with trivia with Mr. Mike.